season of the One Board Podcast is brought to you by Bellwether Games. Discover joy when you play one of their expanding lineup of fun and diverse games. Bellwether Games are both high quality and enjoyable for the whole family. Visit bellwethergames.com to explore all their titles and find a new addition for your collection today. Hey, this is Ryan with the One Board Podcast, and today I'm joined again with my co-host, Rick White, who got his doctorate in studying gaming among porcupine colonies. How are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing very well, yes. It was a very spiny situation. I've got no jokes right now. I don't know what's happening. I think I'm very hungry, I'm not feeling very creative. Though, as you know, I'm eating a cheesy gordita crunch while sitting here. Taco Bell, not a sponsor. I'll see what I can come up with regarding porcupine colony gameplay as the podcast progresses.
What I'll do is I'll just edit this out, and nobody will know that you had no response for that cold mention.
Okay, yeah. We want to make sure that the streak stays intact of me being almost witty.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll just edit this whole thing out. Nobody will ever hear it. Okay.
We know that's never going to happen now.
Oh, I know. I have no time. Anyway, how's that cheesy gritty crunch? Is it pretty good?
It's pretty good. It's got chicken instead of beef, and that is confusing. You don't realize how much the grease helps, or not helps, or impacts the flavor of the whole thing.
Oh, like the grease helps the food slide down your throat. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, while Rick is eating his cheesy gordita crunch, Taco Bell, please hit us up, sponsor us, contact at oneboardfamily.com. We are going to chat about what we've been playing, and then we have a top five list at the end of the show for you guys. And so today, what have we been playing this week, Rick?
I've played a couple of games, had a couple of game nights in the past few days, but... I feel like I always go first, Ryan, and I interrupt, like, your awesome gameplay. So, you know what? I yield the floor to you, sir.
So you can finish eating your...
Listen, we don't have to be honest about why I'm doing this. Like, the reasons can stay secret.
That's completely fine. Yeah. So while Rick eats... So a little bit of the gaming this week. We actually had a really cool game night last night. We got to play some Azul. I mentioned last week on the show that we bought a copy of Azul during Easter weekend. And man, the whole family has just really enjoyed that game. The kids got involved. They've really enjoyed it. Aaron has loved it. I think we've played probably five or six times just since we got it. And it's been a hit for us. So we played Azul last night. We also played a new game, a prototype, that is actually going to be hitting Kickstarter. And Rick, I just wanted to tell you about this because I'm really pretty hype on Filler from Green Couch Games. This is a pastry filling card game that is appropriately named Filler.
That's awesome.
It's a really cool filler.
That's so meta.
Card game. I know. And it's from, the Green Couch Games, Jason Katorski, who we've mentioned on the show before. He runs a podcast called the 20 Minutes of Filler Podcast. So it's very filler over there. But the game is really, really cool. We're actually going to have a preview up on this week. So if you're listening to this right after the release, we'll actually have a preview of this game up to see whether or not, see if this is a good fit for your family, something that you'd want to kickstart. But it's definitely one we're going to be kickstarting. Filler, you get this hand of cards. You're basically a chef. You get these three cards to start off with, and you are working to fill these different types of pastries that are in a recipe book in the middle of the table. And the game works on a lot of different levels because you can do these combos that really set you up for multiple turns, multiple actions on one turn. But also it's a really a cool hand management game. Each card has a time on it, a timestamp on it, which determines player order. around the table. And then it has ingredients on the card, which are used to fill the different pastries. But it also has victory points on some of those cards. And so if you're not managing your victory points versus, because the some of the stuff with higher times may not, it may give you victory points, but they're not very useful in getting yourself to go first. So it's a great game. So far, we've played it 4 or 5 times now, and it is very well balanced. It's a lot of fun. We've had a great time with the game. So we played Filler last night. What else did we play? We played one more game, and I'm trying to remember what it was. I'm blanking.
Who even
knows? Oh, we played another 5-player game, Alhambra.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Alhambra. That's, it's interesting. I think that's one of those games that we forget sometimes. Mm-hmm. We added it to our collection last summer when it was on sale on Amazon. But we picked up Alhambra, and it's a really good game. It's a solid game. I think 15 years ago or so, it won the Spiel des Jahres award. And so it's a really cool tile laying game. You're working to build this really beautiful garden village, essentially. And you're working on trying to get the most of specific colors so you can get points awarded to you through that. And then also there's this wall mechanic where there's a wall that goes around some of the different buildings that you can purchase, and that wall, you get points for continuous walls. And so I lost miserably. I have not played a game that poorly in a very, very long time. Nothing was working for me. I couldn't get the amount of cards that I wanted. I couldn't get money in my hand that was significant. It was terrible. So I felt like a real loser last night, Rick.
Well, sometimes it happens, man. Sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
We actually had a board game night last night with Kyla and Chris, who you met a couple weekends ago. Headed over to their house, and I had soccer practice yesterday. This was on Friday night, so we didn't actually get that much gaming in as much as we usually do, but we were able to play 2 shorter games, and so that ended up being fun. The first one we played was King Domino, which I got my hands on a couple weeks ago for less than $10. You and I had played it before, I believe, a couple times. I think you were the one that introduced it to me anyway. And that's a pretty solid game. We've reviewed it on the site. It won the Spiel des Jahres, or however you pronounce that. I always...
That's an accurate depiction of that word.
Yes.
You know what? Anybody who says you're not an international man, they're a liar.
They don't know things. It won last year, and pretty simple, basic mechanics. It's like playing dominoes with a little bit more involved with the points mechanism, but a game I feel you can pick up in about 3 minutes, and then after one playthrough, you've pretty much got the strategy parts down. So we played that a couple times, then played Sagrada, which both of these games they had not played before, and Sagrada is another one that was really popular. I think it came out last year as well. Am I wrong?
Yeah. Let me ask you on the note of Sagrada, let me ask you this, because I see this comparison a lot, Sagrada versus, Azul. And I think because they're both abstract games and there's some spatial ideas that you're having to compete with. Like what are your thoughts between Sagrada and Azul?
I mean,
as you've played both of these?
Well, I haven't unfortunately gotten Azul to the table yet. We got our hands on it, okay. But, just in what I've seen from it, I feel like Sagrada, because it's dice-based, there's a little bit of luck involved, like with what comes out of the bag and what ends up being rolled on the table. So I feel like with Azul that you get a little bit more control over what's going to happen to you. I mean,
yeah.
Other players can impact you, but I just feel like that element is removed from it. But that's, again, from the outsider's perspective. How about you? I know you've played both of those games.
I feel like they're I know they get compared a lot online, but I feel like they're so different from each other. They both have I think they have a lot of charm, both of them, both of these games. They're both very beautiful games. I feel like Azul is a little easier for me personally. I feel like Azul is almost like I think Sagrada would be the one that I would introduce to somebody who games quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But I would probably only introduce Azul to the person who's like kind of new to board games, don't play that very often, you know, because I think that it makes sense. My mother-in-law played Azul. She really enjoyed it. I think she played twice with us over Easter weekend. Mm-hmm. The kids have really enjoyed it. Whereas I don't know, Sagrada is a little more gamey to me.
Yeah, Sagrada is deceptively difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think it's one that you get better as you play it more often. Using kind of our score tracking app, I looked, right, we beat Chris and Kyla pretty handily, Sarah and I did, and, you know, it wasn't because we were trying to be vicious or anything. It was just keeping track of, you know, all the different scoring mechanisms, because you've got to think about, like, five different things at once every time you play a die. And so keeping track of all those in your mind, I think it definitely is one of those that you need to play it a couple times before you feel that you're actually getting pretty good at it. But it's still fun, like, and it provides a lot of strategy for a, you know, somewhat simple interface. So it's a good one. We like it. And Sarah likes Azul and Sagrada both because of their Spanish bases and the kind of artistic side of that. So she's a big fan of Spain. So she's a big fan of those two games.
That's awesome.
And then for the first time for me, I went on Sunday night and played with some coworkers of mine, played Time Stories. And I had not played that one before. Have you gotten a chance to play Time Stories before?
I haven't. Aaron and I have talked about that. We've actually talked about whether or not Time Stories, you know, I fit that into the realm of, it's kind of cost prohibitive to me, just because you have to buy the modules separately. I don't know. I don't see us getting into Time Stories because of the cost of the different modules. And it's kind of the same reason why we have kind of stuck to, you know, the Unlock series. Mm-hmm. The Unlock series works. I really enjoy the Unlock series. This is a card game that simulates an escape room, essentially. And so the Unlock series works for me, but it also works because it's something that we could hand off to somebody else to replay, mm-hmm. and they can have a game experience with it. For me, I don't know that I'm going to pick up Time Stories just because once you play through it, you know, once you solve it and once you're done with it, that's it.
It's kind of like buying a video game system, buying Time Stories, and then each module is like a game that you buy for that system. Except for these games you can only play once. Because it is solving a mystery, and it is a really cool concept. You are time travelers, and you are working together to try to solve a mystery. We were working the expansion called The Marcy Case, which is zombie-based. And so we each get our own identities, which have different skills. So, like, amount of dice that you can roll for searching, for hand or close combat, and then for long range combat. And then you go to different locations on a map and you interact with different areas of the map that are represented by cards. So each area you go to, like 5 to 7 cards are laid out face down, and each of you pick a location to go visit. And some of you, you know, might go together if you know that one of them's for fighting. Some of them, you know, you might split up separately based on your particular skill set and what you think is going to happen. And all of your moves require time to be spent. So if you run out of time, what happens is you start the game over. And so we did that twice. We went through and ran out of time twice. And we didn't finish the game. We've got to get together sometime again soon, because we need to make sure to go through it and play it the right way so that in the amount of time that we're given, we're able to get all the information we need and accomplish the missions. We played through the first time and like, okay, we're going to learn. There was one area where we needed a particular character to come along with us, and he hadn't made it before. And then when we went to that area where we needed him, it turns out he was just betraying us, which was awful. And so it like cost us like a lot of time to go through that because he took out a bunch of our people. So it was cool. I kind of got this vibe of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective a little bit, which we, you know, say every episode is my favorite game. It is different in that, like, it's based on dice rolls. You know, your success could be based on, you know, what happens there. There's also, you know, for good or for bad, like, there are things that don't necessarily make sense. Like with Sherlock Holmes, you know, when you go to this area, you're going to get information. Like there's a line of logic that runs through it. You know, going in time stories and talking to a particular person could lead to something good, could lead to something bad. And there's no real hints given either way as to what's going to happen. So I enjoyed it. I think I'm in the boat with you that I don't know that I'll ever buy it. But I wouldn't mind. I mean, I'm definitely like that night we left because it was late and I was like, I'll come back tomorrow night and we can finish this week. We didn't pull that off, but I'm definitely excited to finish it. I'd be excited to do other cases, but I don't know, apart from those people that I was playing with, I don't know who I would play that game with.
Yeah, I think that if somebody invited us to play that, I think it would be an easy, you know, that would be an easy sell, right. But I don't know that I would purchase Time Stories. And I've heard people talk about it, especially, you know, Boards Alive did some really good coverage of Time Stories. I think they played four different modules of Time Stories. And I think by the end, they kind of felt iffy about the whole situation, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we played through twice. I wouldn't be surprised if we needed to do two more. And the two times that we went through, it took us 3 hours. Like, we played for 3 hours. So I think that was more time than we were expecting. But and it wasn't even that we were playing all that slow. Like, I felt that we were paced very well. So I think it could be a good game that it's not quite the same as like a standard board game. It maybe is intended to be like almost like, I don't know, you're intended to have multiple play sessions just to finish one game, like to kind of spread it out. So it's an interesting game. I definitely have some issues with it, but it's one that I'm excited to finish up the round with.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Rick, we've talked about the games that we've played, and of course, we would love to know what games you're playing. So if you want to, you can leave them in the comments in the show notes below if you'd like. You could always find the podcast listings at oneboardfamily.com and see latest podcasts that are up, and we would love to hear some of your responses to things that you've been playing. We're going to get into a top five list right now. We'll be back right after this break.
Welcome back to the podcast. Ryan, I have moved on from my cheesy gordita crunch, and I'm now in my KFC $5 fill-up. Not a sponsor. And so while we move into our top five list for this week, you might hear chicken in the background. I'm not going to lie.
What are you... Are you trying to eat... Are you training for something?
I'm training for sitting down a lot, apparently. No, we have that, you know, combo KFC Taco Bell, and Sarah went and picked up lunch, and we're running a little slow today. Eating lunch, multitasking is what I'm doing. But this week we're talking about top five bluffing games.
Yes.
Now, bluffing games, of course, indicate that we are lying in a game. So we take all that our parents taught us not to do, and we throw it out the window, and we lie to our friends while we play these games.
That's right. So in these games, we'll try to explain what element of the game is the bluffing element to the best of our ability, and we'll probably get it wrong some way, and somebody will scream at their stereo. Is that how people
Nobody
listen to podcasts?
Nobody listens to stereos anymore.
They'll scream at their phone, yeah, and then they will unsubscribe from the show.
Yes.
So that is our goal. So let's start off with one of your favorite free games,
Woohoo!
Liar's Dice.
Yes, Liar's Dice. If you have dice, you have Liar's Dice.
That's right.
And you can go out and get a bag of 100 dice on Amazon for pretty cheap. And it's very portable, and it's a game. Liar's Dice, to me, is a game that almost anybody will play. We're going over to my relative's house tomorrow. We've got a relative from Washington coming in, and I plan on bringing my dice with me because I would like to play this game with them, because I think anybody will play it. Liar's Dice,
yeah,
is you start out with an amount of dice, usually five. Everybody has a cup. You roll them, put your cup on top, and you all go around saying how many you think there are of a number, and you have to increase as you go from person to person, either increasing the number on the die or increasing the quantity. So if I said four sixes, you would have to, or four fives, you would have to say four sixes, or you could say five ones, you know, something like that. And at any point, if somebody believes that the statement that was made by the previous player was a lie, they call them a liar. And at that point, there's a few options. We usually then have everybody vote whether they believe it's true or not. And then if the person was right, that there were indeed that many dice on the table, then the other person who challenged them loses a die, as well as anybody who disagreed with them. And if the opposite happens, then the opposite happens. The other group of people lose a die, and you keep playing until one person is left with dice.
Yeah,
I think
this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
This is a game that regularly boggles my mind about the odds. Somebody's sitting there and they're like, "Oh, there's only six dice on the table, four fives," and I'm like, "There's no chance. You only know what two of the dice are. Not happening." And then we pick up the cups, and it's like, "How in the world did that happen?"
Yeah, and Liar's Dice to me is interesting in that it changes completely as a game based on how many people are left. So when you start with like eight people with five dice, it's a gambling game. You have no idea. You have basic statistical understanding of what could be happening, but that's the same thing in any kind of card game.
Yeah.
And so you're just hoping for the best, and you're trying to kind of get in people's heads a little bit with your guesses and try to force them to make a guess about you, and then a little bit considering your dice. But when it gets down to just a few people, it really becomes a true bluffing game, because, you know, when it's just, especially when it's just head to head and they've only got one or two dice, like, you can't, being honest, it can be dangerous, because then you're telling the other person exactly what they have or what you have. And then they can just say, you know, if you say, "I've got 1 6, they can just say two sixes, and you're stuck saying, you know, if they're a liar or not. It can be difficult. But if you can kind of work in the bluffing, say something that you don't even have, that's when the game can get really interesting.
Yeah.
So I really like Liar's Dice a lot. It's a great intro game, probably to me the number one party game for me at the moment. So
and there's always you know, if you just feel like paying money, there's versions of Liar's Dice out there that are just called Liar's Dice, and there's one of our friends actually brought over a Pirates of the Caribbean branded Liar's Dice a couple weeks ago, and we ended up playing at a game night with our church. So it was really fun.
A good church game, Liar's Dice.
So, yeah, that we actually only play bluffing games at church.
There you go.
So yeah, get it all in one night. So the next up is, let's go with Sheriff of Nottingham.
Good choice.
That's actually one of the first games that we covered. We did an unboxing. Aaron and I did an unboxing video when we first started One Board Family, and we got a lot of views. And, you know, Sheriff of Nottingham is one of those games that is a very, you know, even though it is a bluffing game and you are essentially lying, it's a very family fun game. The way that we enjoy Sheriff of Nottingham in our family is that everybody has to act as a persona or this character. So you're essentially everybody. Personally, I love playing Sheriff of Nottingham with five people. That is where that is the sweet spot. It is the game plays 3 to 5 players. I feel like five, it is perfect.
Yeah, I feel like with three, it goes 3 and 4. That goes by too fast, in my opinion.
It
like,
really does. You don't get enough turns.
No.
Yeah. So in Sheriff of Nottingham, each round, another person is going to play the sheriff, and your goal is to get goods that you have a hand of 6 cards, and you are trying to get goods from your hand into the marketplace. But they have to go through the noble sheriff, and that sheriff is going to scrutinize what is in the pouch that you put your goods in. So everybody's given a pouch with a little clasp on it, and you stick the cards inside the pouch, and you hand it over, and you say, hey, I've got 3 wheels of cheese. That's all I've got. Let me get on through to my, to get the stuff sold in the market. And the sheriff has the option to check your, if he thinks that you're lying, or if he or she thinks that you're lying, they get to check your bag. And if they, if you are correct and you were telling the full truth, the sheriff has to pay you. If you were lying, they actually take your contraband or whatever you lied about, and you have to pay them the penalty. And so, it's a really fun game. And honestly, as much as the game encourages this bluffing, lying aspect, the people who do the best are the people who just play straight faced and play straightforward and just, you know, do a really good job of getting their stuff past the sheriff. That's what I've noticed about the game.
Yeah, it's one of those where, you know, it's about timing your bluffing too. Like, maybe you kind of have to randomize it even against yourself, where you try to make yourself unpredictable. Because, you know, if you sneak in, or if you go like 3 in a row where you aren't sneaking in anything, and then one round you just sneak in, everything is just contraband. You know, maybe you can get it past people. There's also, in addition to bluffing, there's bribing, because for the person that's the sheriff, you know, you can give them money to try to say like, hey, why don't you just let this through? You know, this doesn't need to concern you. We can keep going our merry way. Kind of combining those two elements and figuring out, you know, even as the sheriff, like even thinking about if I let this go through, am I still going to make more money? Are they going to make more money? Than, you know, figuring out a little bit of the math to the balance of that. But yeah, it's a fun one. I like that one a lot. We haven't played it much recently, so might need to be time to break that back out.
Our copy is currently being borrowed by a neighbor for game night. I think that they have tonight. So, but it is a fun game. We really enjoy it. And especially, I love the bribing aspect. I love to throw a couple coins somebody's way and, you know, just give them a couple compliments. Like, you know, good sheriff, you are doing an amazing job. I admire you and your physique and everything that you stand for. So why don't you take that money back home, buy something nice for yourself.
Yes. It's, you know? It's also the game that has the most cards in it of any game I think I own. Like, there are a bajillion cards in that box.
There's so many cards, and it's hard to shuffle. Like, I attempted to shuffle, like, half the stack, and it just doesn't work.
Well, and so then the rules say, like, make 2 stacks, and even in 2 stacks, it's like, no, this doesn't work. And there are some rules to that game that talk about, like, discard piles and being able to go through them and stuff. Like, I generally don't pay attention to those, but
that's
a good game.
Just ignore the rules.
Yeah, rules are meant to be ignored.
Yeah. So what's the next one?
Let's go with Spyfall.
Spyfall.
Spyfall is a game that I actually almost gave up on a few months back. I had played it with a few different groups, and it just did not go over well. I'd also played it at some Gameramas, and one thing about games like Spyfall is that it depends on the audience that you play with. If you don't know each other well, and I think the same thing is true about all bluffing games, it works better with people that you know pretty well, because you can maybe read some of their tells and things like that. But Spyfall is a game that includes a bunch of little packets of cards that have locations on them. Then there's one card that says spy. So you give everybody at the table a card. It plays, I think, maybe 4 to 10, maybe. I have no idea. I should have looked it up. But everybody gets a card. So everyone at the table knows that location except for one person. And then you begin to ask each other questions about your location. And so if you were at a hospital, you might say, like, are there a lot of people here? Or you might say, do you work here? Things like that. And there, because there's like 20 different locations in the game, there is kind of some small context that the spy can use. And, you know, there's a page in the book that has all the locations listed out, so they can kind of keep an eye on, you know, kind of deducing which place you might be in. But the spy is trying to avoid being noticed as the spy while figuring out where they are. So at any point, if the team feels like they can identify the spy, they can make some accusations. If at any point the spy feels like they can identify where they are, they can, you know, announce that they are the spy and identify the location. But it's a good social deduction game. The reason I was going to get rid of it, like I said, the people I didn't play that I played with didn't seem to enjoy it that much. But then I played it at the game class that I taught back in January, and my students loved it. They ended up actually making their own version of Spyfall that was centered around jobs instead of locations, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
But yeah, and there are other games like that that kind of fit in that category, but Spyfall is a pretty good one. And there's actually a sequel, oddly enough, called Spyfall 2. I haven't played that one, but yep. I feel that it's mostly more of the same.
Now, Spyfall, I'm ashamed to say Spyfall is on my about to sell list. We talked spring cleaning last week. Spyfall is on my spring cleaning list, so it will probably be going out the door if I don't have some kind of change of heart. And really, it's we got it pretty inexpensively. We found it on sale at Target one day when we were going through some of the games. And the reason why it doesn't hit for us is that I think some of the people we've played Spyfall with, it you have to think quick. If
yes.
you do not think quick, this game is not for you. And so I think that busting this game out, I think three different times and having more questions over and over, I was just like, I think I'm done. You know, I felt like I was explaining the rules over and over and explaining game tactics mm-hmm. more than I was actually playing.
Right. And there's some elements of it, like the first player element. Like if the first person that gets asked a question or that has to ask a question is the spy, it is incredibly difficult to answer the question.
Yeah, it is.
And so, and you know, second player, the second person, you know, somewhat difficult as well, but you just kind of get stuck in that. Not being able to avoid that issue is kind of a problem for me with that game. It is overcome somewhat. I think it is enjoyable with the right group of people. But I also do understand people that are like, no, thank you. Because I used to be one of them.
I need to find that right group of people. Otherwise, it's getting passed along to a new home.
What's next, Ryan?
All right. Next up, we have Cash and Guns. There's cash and there's guns, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Both in one box. Cash and Guns, you are a team of mob members or mafia members, and you are going on this big heist. You are robbing, stealing, pillaging in sorts, and you have guns. But there's some double crossers in the crew. So as this mafia team, what you do is each turn you have a mafia boss, and that mafia boss kind of orchestrates what's going on. And you have to choose a card. The bluffing aspect of this game is that you're choosing a card from your hand to either everybody's given. I think the ratio is 3 and 5. You're given 5 blank cards, and you're giving 3 bullet cards. So the 3 bullet cards are actually wound. You actually wound somebody with them, and the 5 blank cards is basically like a fake shot. It's like, ah, gotcha. I didn't actually shoot you. So what you do is at in each round, you point your gun. The mafia boss will say 1, 2, 3 point. And then everybody points their gun at somebody at the table. These are foam, really cool foam, guns with like orange tips on them. They're awesome. I love these little foam guns. And you point these fake little foam guns at people, and you choose whether or not you're going to stay at the table or not. Everybody's given a little token to represent their character. And if you decide that you do this courage check, essentially, and if you lay down your character, that means I don't want to find out what's at the other end of I don't want to find out what's in the chamber. Mm-hmm. I don't want to find out if you shot me or not. So I'm going to dip out and back away from the table. I'm not getting I'm not getting any loot this time. And then the person who's pointing the gun at you has to make the, you know, they've made that decision already whether or not they were going to shoot you or not. And so anybody who's still standing at the end of the round, so if you get shot, you take a wound marker and you're out of that round. And then if you back down in that round, you also don't get loot. Anybody who's still standing ends up picking loot from the middle of the table. What's cool about it is you've got diamonds and paintings, and those things accumulate and gain you more points, or you just take straight up cash. This is one of my favorite party games, but it does get really brutal. The first time we played, actually, I got it for Christmas years and years ago, and we were playing with our friend Erica and had a great time. The only problem was everybody killed Erica really fast. So like within four rounds, Erica was completely dead. And I think because it plays out in eight rounds, she just sat there for four rounds staring at us,
right,
saying, I hate this game, you know,
because you guys killed me. Yeah. You know, yeah. Player elimination can be an issue in some games, but, you know, it provides a little bit of permanence to actions that I think is important. You know, one thing about cash and guns, I've looked at this and kind of been intrigued by it for a long time. It's definitely silly, really basic. This might sound like a weird comment. I was somewhat kind of bothered by the fact that there are guns in it, that things that actually look like guns, but, they are foam and they are like, they actually look in pictures a lot more like, they're not realistic at all, but they look more realistic in pictures. Like, they're totally, like, toy ridiculous when you actually have them, so they're not that big of a deal. But it's fun. It's silly. And, yeah, you just all pretend like you're in some really bad action movie throughout the whole thing and, like, go, you know, pull it sideways and things like that. It's fun. It leads to a lot of laughter and a little bit of frustration for people that might take it too seriously, but I had a good time when we played at your house a while back with Cash and Guns.
Since this is a family podcast, I think we do have to mention that this game is not going to connect for everybody. There have been times when I know that a person, hey, I don't care what my kids' ages are. I don't want them even playing with Nerf guns. So I'm respectful of that, and Cash and Guns will stay at the house. That's not a game that's coming over to your home. It also gets risky because, you know, you think about it, this is a really fun game, and our extended family had a lot of fun with this. We played this around, I want to say Thanksgiving or Christmas. I introduced my in-laws to it, and we had a blast, had so much fun with it. And they just kept asking to play it over and over and over. And we did. But at the same time, this is something that you couldn't bring into a school.
No.
You couldn't bring to a family game night out in the open. You wouldn't want to do this where you are in a public space. This is a very particular game. And so just think about that. If you like the game that we talked about, you think Cash and Guns would be a good fit for your family. Think about all those different things, because Cash and Guns will see less play because of
because of what it is.
Fake,
yeah.
Realistic guns.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, and there's also options around it, because I've heard somebody else say that they play Cash and Guns in a family atmosphere by pointing at each other.
Yes.
Okay. They just leave the guns in the box.
Yeah.
They still play by the rules, but they leave the guns in the box and they point at each other.
Yeah. And you know, live your life, do whatever, you know, works best for your family and for your particular gaming group. So yeah, that's
right.
Cash and Guns. Now, Ryan, now we lead into the last one, which I think I, again, yield the floor to you for this one, sir.
Okay. Last one, bluffing for our top five bluffing games, going to go with Dead of Winter.
Ryan Gutowski game.
This is my favorite game of all time, Dead of Winter. In Dead of Winter, you are trying to stop the zombie hordes and you are protecting a colony of folks. But here's the deal. Out of the five people, let's say you're playing four or five people, there's a percentage chance that one of you is the traitor. This game is so much fun, not a kid-friendly game. My oldest one, who is 14, she has played, Emily has played this game with us just for a couple turns, filling in for somebody. But it's really not a game for younger kids. But Dead of Winter is a great, great adult game for a game night or putting aside 2 to 3 hours to play a game. There's a lot of narrative to it. It's a lot of fun to play, but the bluffing aspect comes in. If there's a traitor at the table, only the traitor knows that there is a traitor. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, they know that there's, what, a 20% chance that there's a traitor at the table? I mean, it's a low percentage. But what happens is, as the game goes on, you start to realize that somebody is screwing over the entire colony, and something is happening where incorrect cards are being submitted. Somebody's not pulling their weight. And then everybody's brain starts working and saying, why is it that every time this person does this thing, everything goes wrong? Mm-hmm. And then you start accusing each other. I remember there was a night where we played, I think we played 5 players, and we accused my brother of being the traitor, and he laughed it off. And immediately I was like, nope. That's a guilty laugh. We accused him. We threw him out of the colony just to find out that our friend Josh Hill was actually the traitor. And he ended up killing us.
There you go.
Literally killing my character.
Yep.
So he ended up shooting me.
Well, that happens.
So, yeah, it was really bad, man. And just because of the way that your mind works around, like, oh, something is not right, you start accusing people and everybody's up in arms. This is such a great game, and it's one of our top bluffing games.
Yeah, and there's other games out there like this where there's a traitor mechanic. Resistance comes to mind, but in those games, you know that a certain number of you at the table are traitors. I think this adds like another level of paranoia, because there's no certainty at all. Like, you might be paranoid about that person, and everybody's working towards your goal. And so, you know, when somebody puts down a card, it's literally because it's the card that they had or stuff like that. Like, it's not necessarily somebody trying to ruin your game, but you start to question the motive of every single person. And just, you know, in another game, it's, you know, reasonable because you know that somebody has to be the traitor. But in this one, you might be completely unreasonable because you could all be on the same side. I think that element of it is really cool. I like that about this.
And because it's only a percentage of the time that there is a traitor, there's a good chance that there is no traitor. And then you start getting paranoid and you start throwing accusations, and the game really, it plays out so well. And then, you know, you worry about what other decisions people are making. You know, it's like, why did you make that decision? What was the point behind that? You know? And so you start to tell this mental story. This is something that, you know, I talk about a lot within my circle of friends. Sometimes you tell yourself this mental story that doesn't actually exist,
right?
But you tell yourself this, and this game does it so, so well. So, Dead of Winter, one of the top bluffing games out there. So cool.
Well, that is our top five list, Ryan. And I think, you know, people that like this mechanic, you know, we've given some options, and, you know, each of these games that we've given, like, you could kind of take off from each one of those, like Spyfall. There's a bunch of games you could go if you like Spyfall.
I like Chameleon. Speaking of that, Chameleon, I think, is a better version of Spyfall. Check out Chameleon. Very family friendly.
Yeah, and it's a great game. I'm actually, in the next few weeks, hopefully going to be posting a video that compares Spyfall, Chameleon, and Werewords. So that, you know, people can see which of these might fit best with their group. Dead of Winter, having people, you know, playing the bluffing or the traitor role. There's a bunch of games like that. So, you know, if one of these sounds really fun to you, but you're like, the concept sounds good, but I'm not quite sure of the theme. Like, if Dead of Winter, you're like, maybe I want to try something a little bit different. There's options out there. So go check them out. Do a little Googling. Send us a question, and we can let you know some more about other games that you might like if you enjoy bluffing.
All right. That'll do it. Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. Be sure to share us with your friends and family. Be sure to rate us on iTunes. That's how this show continues to increase in numbers, and we get to share these great games with other families out there. Thanks so much to everybody who like the Facebook page. We're over 600 Woo! Followers on facebook.com/oneboardfamily. You can follow us, of course, on Instagram at oneboardfamily, or you can check us out on Twitter now at oneboardfamily.
Whoa.
So stay tuned. We've got some cool stuff coming in the next couple of weeks, including some brand new reviews.
Woohoo! Yeah, we're putting out some new stuff.
Yeah. Until then, we'll see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.